said I'm the one doing crime. Writing the worst thing I ever said in neon lights. Dragging my name through the mud. Fudded something to offend. Tell me what it was. Saw you walk into the night, street light on your face. Saw you walking with your head high, I could not look away. Saw you out with your new guy, I am yesterday, didn't even say goodbye.
Welcome to the Creative Curmudgeon. Today, I am joined by the musician and painter Zoe Bookbinder, aka Zio Bookbinder, but you can find their music under Zoe Bookbinder. I've been familiar with you. You've been on my radar since 2009 when I saw the band that you were in with your sibling, Vermilion Lies, at the Trunk Space in Phoenix, Arizona. And I was delighted to learn that you were an advocate for COVID safety and all of those things. I really like finding that out about artists and musicians and things of that nature. I have people on my podcast that are not in that vein, but I also like to find people that are in that vein and talk with them just for the sake of being able to bring that sort of thing up in the present tense without people looking at me like I smell really bad.
I know exactly what you mean.
Oh, yeah. So thank you so much for doing that. And I wanted to talk a little bit later about the pandemic and how it's changed your creative process and things like that. So listener, if you want to hear more pandemic talk later, you're in for a treat. But first, I wanted to ask, you are coming to me from the woods. Is that correct?
Yes, I live deep in the woods. That's the case.
And this is like a house that you built yourself. Did I understand that correctly on the Instagram?
It will be. My tiny house is not done yet. So I'm living in I'm living on the site where my tiny house will be finished, where I will finish my tiny house. But I live in an even tinier house for the time being.
Is that something that you've always kind of been immersed in? Like, did you have family members growing up? Because I don't know anything about that sort of thing. I'd like to know about that sort of thing in theory, but I'm very bad at retaining that sort of information and doing, like, you know, handy sort of stuff. But did you, like, grow up kind of being involved in that at all?
In, like, building and stuff? Is that what you mean? I mean, it's interesting. Like, my dad is pretty okay at building, but the first time I remember building something with him, I was like 20 or 21. So it's not something we grew up doing together. I think it's something that I gravitated towards maybe for a few reasons. I think I'm one thing I do not lack is creativity. And I just constantly want to be creating, and I have a very particular idea about how I want things to be. So there's often, I mean, I also have never been a person of means, so I can't just like pay someone else to make something how I want it. So I have to do it. So it's not even necessarily like I'm really drawn to carpentry or fine woodworking or something like that. I just want to be able to manifest what is in my brain in the world. And so that's what draws me to building.
That makes sense. Is it when you're kind of in more of a woodsy sort of situation, like, is that easier for you to create? Just not even just houses, but just anything. Like, is it kind of like a little less cluttery?
Yeah, it's easier for me to exist, I would say. I think I lived in cities most of my adult life until recently. And I just noticed, especially once the pandemic started, my anxiety rising with just the overload of input. There's just so much sensory input in cities. And I'm very sensitive. I recently learned I'm autistic, and that's been very illuminating and sort of silly in ways. Like, I look back and I'm like, did I not know this? Like, the signs were so clear. But yeah, sensory overload. I'm so sensitive to lots of input. And so it was pretty clear to me a few years ago that I needed to get out of the city and be in a place that was quieter.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I will say, in your defense about not knowing that you were autistic, like, I've had similar experiences with that and learning, like, in the last couple of years that I was autistic. Not like, and, you know, I wasn't officially diagnosed or whatever, but, like,
me
you
either.
Know, I figured it out, and, you know, I took a questionnaire with my therapist, and they were like, yeah, you need to do a lot of, you know, you have to go through a lot of hoops in order to get, like, a formal diagnosis. And it doesn't really, like, matter so much whether you have a formal diagnosis, but, like, yeah, dude, you scored pretty fucking high on this test. And I was like, yeah, no, that's really nice. But there's, like, this stereotype of, you know, cause I didn't really know anything about it until a few years ago, other than that, like, oh, there's, like, this stereotype on television, like, there's the bad stereotype of just, like, being obsessed with trains and just, right, like, all these different things. And it's like, oh no, actually it can manifest in, like, you know, a billion different ways. So
I tried to get assessed for it recently, and the person basically asked me if I liked trains. So that did not work out. I also diagnosed myself, which I think is super valid.
No, yeah, absolutely. Was there, because I'm assuming that, and I actually wanted to ask you about this because I've seen you post about this sort of thing. So I guess we'll just, like, get to this now. Like, for me, as far as being a creative person, like, I've gone through, I still haven't really found a routine that consistently, like, works. Oftentimes things will work for, like, short periods of time. I like in my head saying, like, oh, I'm going to be doing it during, like, these blocks of time or whatever, and in this environment, but that oftentimes doesn't consistently work. And most of the people that I've talked to about this on this podcast don't have, like, I make stuff specifically in the mornings or, like, in, like, this room or, like, whatever. It's just kind of like, you know, because we're all having to deal with capitalism and working and burnout and all those things, and so just kind of like,
yeah,
is whenever we can. But going back to you, did you have to kind of work differently, especially, like, learning in the last couple of years? How has that affected how you work? Did that all make sense? I kind of rambled.
Do you mean, like, the difference between, like, pre-COVID and post-COVID, or when you reference the past few years, or do you mean the woods versus the city?
Oh, I mean, like, no, I mean autism. I mean, like, neurodivergence.
Oh, with autism, like, yeah.
Like, yeah. So those are all questions to get into as well. But as far as, like, because, yeah, you know, there's the kind of handful of ways to exist in the world, you know, supposedly. And then, like, if you don't exist within those boxes or are able to create within those boxes, then you kind of have to keep banging your head against the wall until you, yeah, get it right, because that's, like, the right way or whatever. So I was just curious what that process was like for you, like, figuring out shit that, like, works for you as a creative person.
Yeah. Yeah. routine definitely does not work for me at all. And I am autistic and ADHD. Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I had a feeling. I had a feeling there was a similar brain thing going on.
I have to have this notebook just to like kind of take like little notes on like when people are talking for long periods of time, just to like kind of stay on track. That's why like I'm never going to put out video of like podcasts or whatever like people do, like, because it's just like, I don't know, I wouldn't be comfortable with that. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So routine definitely doesn't work for me. And it is like, it does feel like this battle between the way that I want to function and capitalism, and sort of these two things making demands on me. And I tend towards accommodating my brain versus accommodating capitalism, which is why I live in a shed, to be totally honest with you. I live in a shed in the woods. I'm not interested in like paying bills and paying rent. I mean, I have to pay some bills, obviously, but I keep my living expenses as low as possible because, fitting into capitalism does not work for me, has never worked for me. And so, you know, I just have to do it a different way because, yeah, my brain really does not. It's like routine isn't even an option. I'm sure you can relate. If I try to force it, especially with creativity, but even with something mundane, like, you know, sometimes I'll pick up like a normal job every once in a while just to see, just to try it out again. And it's like my brain is like putting me to sleep. It's just I like totally shut down with routine. It's so hard for me to function. In routine. And so instead there's like, I feel like there's this, maybe it's still a pattern, but it's definitely, there's some sort of path that my brain travels in. And I just try to follow it. And I've always done that before I knew I was autistic. I just took those assessments you were talking about. I just took like four of those in December. Like I'm brand new to realizing I knew I was like different, but you know, I'm very new to knowing that I'm autistic. So, so I think now it's more of this conscious choice to allow myself to be different, but I was always sort of had to accommodate it, even if I didn't know why, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. So like, basically, you just kind of do it when you feel like it, because that's yes, what you can do. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I learned from your website that you stayed in like various Buddhist communities when you were growing up, and I'm curious what you carried with that as a creative person. For me, I'm always thinking that like what I'm doing ain't good enough. And I'm curious if that sort of upbringing affected your acceptance of the stuff you make.
I will say no. Okay. I don't think it did. I mean, maybe, but I've always been really underconfident about the work I'm creating. I'm always thinking it needs to be better. It needs to be different. Definitely comparing myself to my peers constantly. And actually something that has helped like finally start to break through that is realizing that I'm autistic and realizing that my brain is different and unique and different than most of my peers that I've been comparing myself to, and realizing like what I have to offer. Like, no wonder what I'm creating is so different than most of my peers. And that's really valuable. And instead of fighting it and trying to be more like these other people in what I'm creating or in who I am, I'm starting to embrace like this is actually really special. And that's been really interesting. I mean,
are you saying like you were, I'm sorry to interrupt, but are you saying like you were trying to go for like a specific style, and then no matter how hard you were trying, like you couldn't quite get there. And like, since like learning this about yourself, you're more accepting of it just being like what it is. Am I understanding that correctly?
Sort of. There was never one style that I was trying to get to, but I would sort of bounce around, and it was like whoever I was really admiring at the time, or like whoever I was seeing becoming, you know, getting the success that I wanted or something, you know, it was always like comparing myself to, yeah, either people whose music I thought was better than mine or people who were getting some level of success that I wanted. And yeah, constantly thinking like, oh, I need to be more like that. I'm not good enough. I, you know, my music is weird, or my art is weird, or I'm weird. All are true. Yeah. And I've often thought my music is too simple. Like my melodies are too simple. Chord progressions are too simple. And
that's wild that you sorry to interrupt again. That's wild that you think that, because I was like listening to some of your stuff this week, and just like the complexity of it, I was thinking like holy fuck, I could never do something like this. And I'm assuming that maybe like that's maybe that drive, not to psychoanalyze, but maybe that drive of like, oh, this is like always too simple. Maybe that's why it ended up being less simple. There you go.
Yes, I definitely threw in. I mean, sometimes it was just because it was, you know, I was playing around and I liked it. And there definitely are songs where I was intentionally trying to make it unpredictable and less, yeah, sort of cookie cutter or something.
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Prison Music Project, and if you could briefly describe it for listeners who haven't heard of it, and also talk about what lessons you took from the people that you worked with, like as an artist. I would imagine that, like, kind of going back to things like needing to be a certain way, that like, because this is kind of how it is with me, like working where it kind of has to be like a certain way. But then like when you work with people who have less tools and are still able to make like cool shit, that it kind of like would change. That's how it's been for me, is it's changed my thought process in that way. I don't know how that is for you.
I will say that work was totally life-changing for me, and I already existed in pretty radical communities. I think I'm, as an autistic person, I'm drawn to communities that are questioning the status quo. Though I never obviously made that connection until recently, but yeah, I'm always questioning everything. So then I was already in this community of people who were questioning everything, but prison and mass incarceration wasn't yet a conversation that most people were having, or even in my community that were radical. But this opportunity came up, and I thought it would, I just couldn't say no, basically. And I would say that even more than existing in this community that was questioning everything, that really, really radicalized me and made me question things on a, I guess, on a deeper level, or more across the board, that really, like, none of the institutions that we depend on are dependable, for our own good. And that it's all really a part of the capitalist machine. But that wasn't, you know, I didn't, the way that I got there through this work was through meeting these people and working with these people on music, and seeing the way these incarcerated individuals were living inside of this human-made hell. And, you know, and then leaving and being in the society that even if they don't want to, we're all supporting that system, even if we don't want to. You know, it's all there to protect us, but it's all part of the machine. And so I think it really just like broke the whole sort of picture of, let's say, America, but it really like shattered that image for me, or like the idea that really anything, any of our institutions anyway, or like government systems are in any way right or good. I was thinking about the question about music. It made it sort of hard for me for a while to write, because I felt like, well, the things that I used to write about were so trivial. And I think it took a while for me to start to have empathy for myself again. If any time I felt like I was struggling with something, I just sort of brushed it aside, because I know all these people that are struggling through something that is exponentially worse than anything I've struggled through.
Yeah, I've been in similar experiences where it's like, you know, hard to just cut yourself slack for feeling like shit. Because it's like, oh, well, these people really have a reason to feel like shit. So like, I suck for, you know, feeling like shit compared to that. But like, you know, we're all entitled to feel like shit.
Totally. And I have gotten there again. It took a few years.
So how would that work? Where like, would it be the prisoners would write the lyrics and then you would write the music to that? Or was it a collaboration on both? Like, how would that usually work?
It was a mix, because there were some people that I was collaborating with who wrote poems, so they just had lyrics to offer. And then there were other people who were musicians. And so then, you know, I worked with their music. And then there were some collaborations with people who also, I'm clicking in my phone. There were collaborations. So, and most of the collaborations were mostly with, like rappers, like lyricists. And in some of those, I wrote a hook and then they recorded their lyrics over the phone. And then I worked with the producer on the outside. So it was a mix, and it was like really individual to the person and their skills and what they had to offer.
So like the producer would take like the phone recording and then just kind of make it a little more slick.
Yeah. And like build a beat behind it and add the instrumentation and stuff. Yeah.
That's awesome. So I wanted to talk about painting a little bit. Did you have any sort of formal painting education or whatnot, or was that something you largely taught yourself?
I taught myself, and just in the past, it's actually when I first moved to the woods. I had like dabbled in watercolor before, but it very just as a hobby, you know, just fun. I didn't think I was any good at it. But when I moved to the woods 2.5 years ago, when I first got up here, in upstate New York, I didn't really know anyone, and I hadn't spent, I hadn't been in a winter, hadn't experienced winter in many, many years. And so I lived in this little cabin by myself, and I just had all of this unstructured time where there were no distractions at all. I didn't know anyone, so there was no social distraction, and it was so incredibly peaceful. So that's when I really taught myself to paint, just a couple years ago.
I'm curious, because there's definitely like visual art that I like, and I've considered at various points getting more into doing drawing or collage or whatever, hesitant because I'm very fearful of making a fool of myself, because I feel like visual art almost has this like elitist sort of connotation to it, more so than like music does. We're kind of going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, like everybody can make music. And I feel like there is more of an acceptance of things that, at least, you know, not necessarily in a mainstream sort of way, but, you know, there's an audience for, you know, the Shags or Daniel Johnston or like whatever. And there's also just like the inherent, like you listen to music and there's like a gut, like, I like this, I don't like this. And then you can kind of just through osmosis take in things that you like about it, as opposed to kind of studying visual art and then like figuring out like what people, I don't know. It's just a little harder to figure out like whether what I'm making is any good or not when it's like visual or whatnot. Have you had similar experiences with that as like a self-taught artist, or do you not give a fuck?
I definitely give a fuck, but again, like I think I was feeling more self-conscious, and then again with this like autism realization, I'm embracing more just what comes out of me and what I like creating. And I am curious over the next, you know, because it's still very new to me. I'm you know, 3-4 months into knowing this about myself. So I'm curious actually how it might change my art, because I think I might censor myself less, unmask even in creating my art. So that's exciting to think about. I haven't had too much time to paint in the last few months, so it hasn't quite had its chance to come out. But I'll say that the art that I tend to be drawn to is not like high art. I'm really drawn to folk art. I love Polish and Ukrainian folk art specifically. And I definitely draw from those styles in my art. And I did, like, at the beginning, I think I wanted to challenge myself to see if I could create, if I could paint sort of semi-photorealistically. And I, you know, was painting birds and more of like a scientific illustration kind of, except it was watercolor, but still trying to make them look more real. And once I realized, like, I'm pretty good at that, and I could get much better at that if I had the focus, but it's actually not what I really enjoy doing, because I'm more interested in realizing the images in my mind rather than copying an image that I find somewhere. So I'm more interested in...
I was going to say, why do you... paint birds? Like, what is the, is it just that like birds are awesome, or is there some sort of deeper meaning to that that you'd like to share?
There isn't a deeper meaning. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know why I started with birds and kind of got stuck there for a while. I don't know. I think it's maybe was a hyperfixation thing, where I was just like really interested in mimicking the feather textures. And I also got really into painting hands. I'm not over that, to be honest. I'm over painting birds. I'm not over painting hands. Yeah. So maybe it was, I don't know. I think I was finding things that are typically like tricky to paint. Like, hands are really difficult. They take forever to get right. And I think that's part of the appeal for me. But also, I just really love hands. I don't know. I think I was just painting things I like to look at. And I'm still really just painting animals, flowers, hands, sometimes structures. And that probably relates to my interest in construction and building things. Yeah.
I think that's valuable in and of itself. Like, I was taking a poetry class a couple of years ago with my friend Eric, who's also been on this podcast. And one of the poems was about my dog. And I forget what it was. I haven't worked on it more since, but it was like something about being hypnotized by your dog because you love it so much. And then he was like, what are you trying to convey in this poem? And I was like, I don't know. I like my dog. I felt like a fool in that moment, but you know, I think that's valid in and of itself.
Yeah. I often don't really have some like deeper, I think this is like, so because I my hyperfixation right now is autism. So this is just going to keep coming up. But I've been wondering if, because like a lot of autistic people, I'm a super straightforward, direct communicator, and I have a really hard time with subtext or innuendo, reading between the lines, things like that. So I wonder if, like, this is also the way I write song lyrics. And actually, I've tried to complicate my song lyrics because I thought that was something that was too simple about my songs, that I'm very straightforward. But that's because it's the way that I also communicate, and songs are communicating. Anyway, tangent. But so, like, in my songs, you know, it's very obvious what they're about for the most part, except for the ones that I was trying to complicate to be different than myself. And then I think my paintings too, there is no like hidden meaning. It's just like, no, this is just a fox and flowers. That's it. If I was trying to like convey a deeper meaning, it would just, that would be the painting. And there wouldn't be anything hidden, because it's, that's also like, you know, my paintings are in the style that I communicate, which is just like very straightforward and easy to understand. If you're taking my words literally, I will say as a caveat.
Yeah. I wanted to now shift to the musical part. I mean, not that we've been talking about music, but as far as more so how you got into not just making music to begin with, but how you kind of, and I was going to say how you became you, but I know that's, as we've been talking about, that's still like a work in progress or whatever. But as far as like, you know, the basic sound that you have, I was curious about A, how you started making music at all, and B, like the trial and error process before you kind of figured out what worked best for you. Like, did you go through a metal phase, or I don't know.
No, that's interesting. I think I mean, even though there's been like some genre exploring, but all sort of within, I don't want to say within a folk realm, but kind of, like sometimes it's a little bluesy, sometimes it's a little country. People often refer to my music as pop too, which is interesting. I honestly don't understand genres or how you decide how music fits into them. I more digest music just, it's like a physical reaction. And so I'm not really thinking about genre. I'm just thinking about how my body physically reacts to music. And I think that's also how I create it and how I always have, even though I think I've tried, as you know, as we talked about, I've sort of tried to manipulate it to be different, but I don't think I've been terribly successful at that. I think my music is always pretty much a straightforward representation of myself. And apparently that mostly falls in the American folk genre.
What about singing? Is there like a specific singer or whatever that's kind of geared you in a certain style or pointed you into a certain style?
When I first started in music, and you'll hear this on like early Vermilion Lies, I was super inspired by Billie Holiday, and I was pretty good at mimicking her voice to some extent. And so I did this like nasal affect. And on my first solo album, my producer, Cesar Alvarez, we were just playing around with some songs really early on in the, actually, I don't even think this is how I picked him as a producer. I don't even think he was producing my, they were producing my record yet. Yeah, it was when I, like early on when we first met, and I was playing them a song that I wrote, and they said, wait, stop, just like sing it as yourself. And I was sort of shaken and like, what? Oh, you want me to drop this affect, this like nasal old timey affect that I've just been singing with this whole time, and so that I don't even notice anymore. And that's why I picked them to produce my first record. Because I thought that was a great note. And really since then, I haven't ever affected my voice in any way. And if anything, like my voice has definitely changed over time. And it's really that my voice has changed as I get older. There's different, like I'm not as good at singing high anymore, but my low register has become richer and easier for me to access. And so I tend to sing where it feels the most comfortable. And that kind of decides my sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense. My partner is a singing teacher, and they've worked with me a lot over the years, both with just like singing, and years ago when I was doing something kind of rap adjacent or whatever. But it was just this ongoing process of like, just sing like you, like how your voice sounds, like go for that, as opposed to, you know, like I have these early recordings from my early 20s where I was trying really hard to sound like Tom Waits, and it is so bad and nobody will ever hear it. I have a band where I have like a lot of the stuff archived that I've made over the years. That's not on there. But yeah, just like that, it seems so simple. Like that seems so obvious, mm-hmm. but then like it takes a really long time to like make your brain think that way. I don't know.
Yeah.
How do you write songs? Like, do you, is it kind of a little different each time? Do you usually write the music first? Like, how does that usually come together?
I would say there's two main ways it can happen. One is if I'm messing around with on guitar and I find, you know, some like two chords or three chords that I like together, or a picking pattern or whatever, I'll start there and then try to find a melody and write lyrics. Maybe more often I sing a line. I come up with a line because I am, whenever there's not input, this is where living in the woods is really good for me. If there's no auditory, well, not no, but like if it's birds and a waterfall, if there's no, what am I trying to say? Like words or people talking or something like that around, then I'm constantly singing to myself. And so that's often where the beginning of a song comes, as I'm sort of absentmindedly singing. And then I stumble upon like, oh, that's a cute like melody. Oh, let me try to write words to that. Oh, let me go get my guitar. And then I'll start to try to put that to music.
How do you record these days? Are you still mainly working with producers? Is this upcoming album? I know that you worked with a group of people, but were you kind of the main producer, or how did that work?
No, I don't think I'm a terribly, well, this is interesting. I haven't in the past thought I was a very good producer because I don't have, what is the word? I'm like, like, I don't even often know what notes I'm playing or singing. you know, I'm more of a, just sort of an intuitive musician. So, like composing, and arranging is not something that I'm good at. And so, yeah, I've never really thought that my strength was in producing. I did produce my record Shadow and I do like it, but, yeah, with this record, I definitely wanted to work with someone. And I got a grant for this record. And so I had more money to make a record than I'd ever had, like four times more than I'd ever had before. And it felt like, okay, I want to explore the possibilities and I want to, yeah, I want to make a record that's four times better if possible. Not that like money equals that, like that's not how that works at all, but I just wanted to sort of use it to try to, I don't know, bring my songs to their full potential. So yeah, I looked around for producers and I kind of stumbled upon the woman who did produce it, Megan McCormick, because she was, I was on tour with Ani DeFranco and she was playing a double bill with Jenny Lewis, and Megan McCormick was playing guitar with Jenny Lewis. And I don't usually even notice like the separate parts of music. It's more of like a whole thing I'm taking in, but I heard her guitar and I was just like totally charmed by it and impressed with it. And so I asked her after the show if she'd be interested in playing guitar on my next album. And she said, well, how about I produce it? So it just kind of happened. And she's Jenny Lewis's band director. So it, yeah. And she's a producer in general. So
great.
Yeah, definitely the right choice.
All right. So let's talk about COVID. So I was curious because for me, like one thing that I thought about, like since COVID started, the stuff that I've been making is more in the spoken word vein or whatever. I take little micro stories or poems or whatever. I have them over here and I have these like instrumental pieces of music over here. And then I kind of try to just like put them together as seems like it makes sense, and have put out a couple albums that way so far. And so I haven't been performing live and don't know when I will again. But the idea of doing, like, you know, I'm making music in Ableton. So like there's all sorts of just like electronic things here and there, stuff that I haven't thought about recreating live. And then like, I haven't figured out, I think you can make spoken word stuff interesting live, but I haven't really like thought of how, because I haven't really been thinking about how this stuff would be like presented in that fashion. Whereas when I was doing stuff that was more traditional band songs or whatever, that was kind of always a little bit in the back of my mind, like the way that this would translate when like performing it like in front of people. And so I was curious how this experience has affected your artistic process and how you see the stuff that you make.
Yeah. Feels heavy, honestly. Like, I think I maybe never realized how much performing inspired my creativity. And my last tour, I tried to do in a COVID safe way and I got COVID and I'm no longer touring. And I haven't written a song in about a year and a half, which has never happened since I picked up guitar when I was 17. I've never gone this long before. And I think it's because I don't see any performance on the horizon. And so much of my process is playing for other people and getting feedback, whether it's, you know, playing for a friend and asking them what they think, or it's playing for an audience and listening for their reaction. And that's because I never know what songs of mine are, like, quote unquote, good or like worthy of being on an album. I was always basing that off of the songs that got the biggest reaction from the audience. That's how I know. And so it feels like so much. Oh, it's making me emotional. I think so much of my creative process is that relationship to the audience. And I wish I liked performing virtually, but I don't. It just feels extremely draining for me. I did it a bunch at the beginning, but I haven't in a long time. And I don't know, maybe I need to start again. Maybe after this long of not performing for a live audience, it'll feel good. I don't think so.
So, yeah. You mean would feel good, like through Zoom or whatever?
Yeah, like virtual, virtual concert, yeah. Yeah, and even after I stopped doing it for, like, the public, I was still doing it for people on Patreon. And, yeah, it feels soul-sucking. I hate performing for, it's interesting, because I love hanging out with people on Zoom or FaceTime, you know. Like, this conversation feels real and fulfilling to me, but for some reason that exchange of music to an audience, that doesn't work for me virtually. So since stopping live performing, I really have not been musically creative at all. And I hope it comes back. I haven't tried forcing it. I've just been letting it be. There may be a time when, like, enough time has passed and I decide to start forcing it or trying to. We'll see.
Yeah, no, I mean, it seems like, because for me, I've had similar experiences where I would perform things live before I would, like, necessarily put them on an album or release them. And so I kind of was able to gauge more what people would say to me in person or how they would react in person versus, like, when you're just, like, putting stuff out without that, like, test audience or whatever. Yeah. And you kind of have to do a lot more of a leap of faith because people won't reach out to you online or whatever in the same way that they will when they're just, like, when you're right in front of them or whatever.
Yeah. I tried to elicit that through my Patreon, actually, and through the subscribers. I was sending or, like, posting demos to Patreon and, like, kind of begging
for some sort of feedback.
Subscribers for feedback, like, which of all these songs should go on the album? Like, mm-hmm. Which are your favorites? What are you responding to? Because I didn't have that live audience feedback. And a lot of these songs have never been played for a live audience that are on the new album. And that feels like scary and vulnerable. And that also is how a producer really helped, because I probably sent her like 30 songs and she whittled it down to the 13 that it is.
What have you been doing with your time if you haven't been making music or painting so much? I oftentimes will get, I'm in the middle of a big creative block right now, and I don't really, I mean, I read, so, like, you know, I read with that time and whatnot and hang out with my family and my dog, but I other than that, I don't know what else to do with my time. Like, I don't I don't know what have you been up to?
It's funny how, like, even when I'm not doing my job or something. I still feel like very busy. It feels like just existing in capitalism is takes a lot of time. But yeah, I've been building my tiny house and painting and making some animated videos, making some music videos. Trying to think if there's anything else in there. I've also moved 5 times in the past 2 years, which is super time consuming.
So as far as, since you're not touring, how have you been more like getting your stuff out into the world? Like, do you do a lot of your own publicity? Like, what avenues have you been taking to promote your stuff and what you do?
Well, I was able to, like, with the grant, I was able to use part of it for publicity. So I have a publicist for the new record, which is great. And she's putting it out there and getting write-ups and getting it added to playlists and stuff. So that's been great, because that's definitely not something I'm very good at. So I'm very grateful that I got a budget for that from the grant.
Yeah, no, I've never gone like that route. And generally, like, I'll just, if I make something, I'll post about it once or maybe twice, and then I'll just like feel like I'm annoying people, and then I won't. But then I'm like, why isn't this getting any plays? Anyway.
Yeah. Algorithm. It's the algorithm.
Right. In closing, what advice would you have for people, both as far as living their best creative life or whatever, as well as just getting their stuff out into the world? Like, do you have any advice for either or both?
God, I feel so lost lately in terms of that. I think 5 years ago I would have had advice. What would I have said 5 years ago? I think, like, people used to ask me how to write songs, because I've played with plenty of musicians who are, you know, more skilled musicians than I am, but they don't know how to write a song, or they don't know how to get over the self-consciousness in order to, like, finish and you know, perform a song. And for those people, I've always just said, like, you are gonna write a bunch of bad songs, and you just have to be okay with that. Like, just write them. You have to get over that fear. And I think that's the same for any art. And, you know, there's so much music that I've put out that now feels embarrassing to me, but it's just part of it. It's just part of it. I'm still glad that I put it out there. It's like, it feels silly and kind of embarrassing, but it's also part of my history, and I wouldn't be where I am now if I hadn't done that. And it feels the same for painting, actually. Like, the paintings that I was posting on Facebook, even just 2 years ago, I'm like, ugh, that was not good enough to post. But again, it's just part of it. It's just part of the process. And I think a lot of it is just getting over your own ego and not being afraid to put out work that you think isn't good enough.
I'd like to get to that point eventually about things I'm embarrassed about, both artistically and just personally, as far as life. You know, that helped me. That's okay, because that helped me become who I am. I sort of feel that way, but like logically, but like maybe one day I'll sort of more so get to that point emotionally, hopefully. But so yeah. Basically what you're saying is, like, just keep making stuff, even if you think it stinks. Just like get in that process, and then maybe eventually you'll make something that won't stink.
Yeah, and even if you and make, I mean, it, yeah. It's cool. Yeah. Just be okay with it kind of stinking. And also, like, share it, even if you're not sure if it stinks. Like, let people hear it or see it or, you know, whatever kind of art it is. But for, at least for me, and I mean, maybe it depends what kind of creator you are, but I think most people who are creating art are making it to share it. I mean, we're not making it just for ourselves. Let's be real. And so I think that that is a really crucial part of it, even if you're not feeling proud of it or you're feeling self-conscious. I think a really crucial part is sharing it and putting it out there. And as you keep creating, you just, you know, you get better. So just embrace being bad at it for a while.
Right. Well, thank you for talking to me today.
Yeah. Thanks.
What is there anything that you want to promote or gear listeners towards? Venmo.com/ the creative curmudgeon to start off with for tips. Maybe you'd like to go towards that. I don't know. Just throwing that out.
Yeah. There. You did it.
All right, great. Yeah, what else?
Just the first two singles from my album are out there. They are Mycelium and Hold My Hand. From the album Wildflower, and that album comes out April 26th. And I'm getting really ambitious about this animated music video that may or may not come out with the album.
Awesome.
From my shed in the woods.
All right, look forward to it. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for joining me today. And yeah.
Great. Thanks, Jason.